Okay, I have the exams. Surprise, surprise. Immortality. This is weird stuff. Very philosophical. More philosophical than me. The median was 50. And the mean was slightly less than 50. It was 47.42. Standard deviation was 12. So it was a low sort of a grade exam, as you expected. And it was a hard one. So to we had effectively two hard exams in a row. First one was a joke, very easy. But then we went hard, right? Okay, so the final exam is going to be much more easy. I promise to do that. I noticed that people who didn't do well, sometimes didn't do well due to different reasons in this exam. Some of them really didn't know what they were doing. Others knew what they were doing, but they ran out of time. So there were clearly some people who would have done better had they more time. So the other thing I will pay attention to the final exam is that I'm going to make it a little bit shorter. Okay? There's going to be 5 problems, but maybe each problem is going to be slightly shorter so that you'll have more time. So expect 1.5 times the regular exam sort of a load in the final exam. All right, so now I will distribute these things. And then I'll collect the regrade requests on Thursday, the last day of class. And this is more or less, not exactly, in the reverse order that I received. So the last 3 people know who they are when they have been called. All right, I start with Zhengji Lu, L-U. Dylan Wagner is there. Dae-hoon Han. Dae-hoon Han. Minko Kim. Now I know who he is. She's a lady in Korea. Right? Jinmin Kim. Jerry Shim. David Jordan. Raymond Lee. Bay. Payin Liao. Zhu. Junheng Zhu. Jianghui Zhu. Hongchuan Li. Hao Zhu. Zhongbing Lim, L-I-M. This is the Korean who came from the army. Samuel Vizquerito. Dylan Helm. Alex Kapawan. Chi Yang. Kirk Knapp. Yan Yan. Utara Ear. Akash. Kian Zhu. Zhu Yang Yao. Michelle Ranzai. Pranav. Chiang Kai-shek. The Alex from Texas.
Hyun Bo Yoon.
Wei Pi Hui, CUI. Zhong Nan Du. Matthew Jung. Jim Brawl. The other Kui, Yu Kui. Meng Chen Shi. Meng Chen. Jin Yan Song. Patrick. Ye Denghui, Denghui. Menyu Wang. Ha Ok Chung. Can you pass? Suchaya. Can you pass this to Suchaya? Le Wang. Wang. Yan Bing Lin, L-I-N. Kevin Yu. Yu, right? Not Wu. Carolyn Cho. Christine Cabrera. Kirin. Disha. Kyung Chen. Wei Hu. Daylin Sun. Michael Patterson, you are at the end. You are at the very end, remember? Steve Granda. Ryan Dickinson. Hao Zhen. Ryan Canabi. Ki Zhao. Jamal. Michael Yarber. Jason. Okay. I didn't expect you. I didn't see you. You already have it in your shirt and t shirt. Jason. Jonathan. Benjamin Chung. Michael. Okay, so some of you are disappointed, some of you are shrugging shoulders, some of you are pretty happy. I don't know where you are. It was a hard exam. I think it was somewhat, maybe too hard. Sometimes when you make the exam either too hard or too heavy, too easy, either way, sometimes it doesn't test well. You don't find out how well you did this. Okay. So I felt that in problem number two, it didn't necessarily test how well the middle ground understood it. Of course, the people who succeeded in that, I know what they know, right? So that was good, but it didn't help many. So anyway, I talked about, for those of you who came in late, the median is exactly 50. Okay, mean was about 47-ish. Standard deviation, 12-ish. Okay, that gives you some idea. And we'll have a sort of an easier, sort of more relaxed final exam at that moment. Any questions? All right, good. So let's move on.
So I'm hoping that you are more or less finished with the first three problems in the homework that's due Thursday, and perhaps working on constructing the Smith chart using that optional problem. I really recommend everyone to go through that optional problem.
So, maybe to summarize quickly, we have a transmission line of some length. It is terminated by some load, Z sub L. It has some characteristic impedance, and it is connected to some source that can be shown in Thevenin representation like that, or equivalently, you can replace it with the corresponding Norton. It doesn't matter. We are dealing with phasors, but we are not putting tildes anymore. And at any location on the line, we have a line impedance that happens to be the ratio of the line voltage phasor and line current phasor, okay? And the way we are measuring distances is we have the axis running from the load towards the generator, and where the generator is connected is L, some distance. That L can be anything. Previously, in the previous lectures, we made that L to be sometimes integer multiples of lambda over 4, which was very nice. Then we could use either lambda, quarter wave transformer ideas or half wave transformer ideas. But not all circuits are like this, so we are now dealing with the more general case. Now, at every location D away from the load, there is a corresponding impedance Z of D, that is V of D divided by I of D. Including at D equals 0, then we call it the load impedance. Including D equals L, then we call it the input impedance, okay? But in general, we call it the line impedance, okay? And this line impedance, we typically, in a shorthand, just will say Z. We will hide the fact that it's a function of D, but don't ever forget that it's a function of D. It's a complex number. And that happens to be related to a reflection coefficient, that is generalized reflection coefficient, which is nothing other than the load reflection coefficient. Now there is that gamma of D, which is the load reflection coefficient, times e to the minus j 2 beta d. And this beta is 2 pi over lambda, or omega over b, and it's a real number because we are working on lossless lines, only lossy lines on Thursday. I'll say something about that. And in this thing, gamma sub L is the reflection coefficient, it's the load reflection coefficient. It is Z sub L minus Z sub 0 divided by Z sub L plus Z sub 0. Okay? So the load reflection coefficient is turned into generalized reflection coefficient with a very simple mathematical manipulation. You simply multiply it with a complex exponential. This itself is a complex number, so it itself has its magnitude and phase angle. Okay? You just subtract from the phase angle of the load reflection coefficient the phase angle that corresponds to 2 beta d, okay? And that is 0, of course, at the load end, but then as you are backing away from the load towards the generator, that increases. So basically, then you can visualize this complex number, gamma of d, to be represented by an arrow on the complex plane. That arrow has a magnitude. And depending on where you are on the line, that arrow is just pointing in other direction. It just turns around and around and around the complex plane, okay? That is a rather easy thing to handle, okay? Now, if you have that guy, which is easy to figure out what it is as a function of position, then you can use that to represent impedance, which goes through more complicated variations, okay? And that relationship is now given by these transformations. One of them reads z over z naught is 1 plus gamma divided by 1 minus gamma. So these two things are just rotating vectors on the complex plane. You add them and you subtract them compared to 1 and you ratio them, you have the impedance. Actually, you have the line impedance normalized by the characteristic impedance. This is something that we refer to as little z. Alright? That's unitless, or z is in ohms. The inverse of little z is little y, and it is called the normalized admittance. Okay? That can in turn be viewed as z naught divided by z, which can in turn be viewed as y divided by y naught, where y naught is 1 over z naught, and y is 1 over z. Okay? And we actually, in transmission line theory and applications, we use of admittance as much as impedance, and sometimes more, because we think we connect things in parallel. Okay, so admittance becomes an important concept. Any questions? So this is one transformation equation. The inverse of that transformation equation is given here. When you solve for gamma, you get this equation. And this equation is easy to remember because it is in the standard form of all reflection coefficients. What you bang into minus where you're writing divided by the sum. Okay? And then yesterday, I think towards the end, I was saying that although we have a we have at any point on the line two complex variables. One is the z of d at that point, and then the corresponding gamma of d, which are bilinear transformation of one another, or the Mobius transformations of one another, just like given by those equations. But that doesn't mean that there is reflections taking place at any point in the line. No, reflections are only happening at the ends of the line. No homogeneous propagation medium, whether it's air, free space, or a plasma, or a transmission line, is going to ever reflect waves as long as it is homogeneous. It is only when medium properties change as a function of position. This is where the reflections take place, okay? So in this system, reflections are only going to take place here and here. Somebody asks, why are we only dealing with two waves? There are infinitely number of waves that are reflecting, but then we gave the answer to that. By the time you settle down to steady state, you sum up all those reflected waves. All those reflected cosines become equal to one cosine, because sum of cosines with the same frequency is still a cosine with the same frequency except for a phase shift, and that's the answer. So in general, in steady state, we envision one forward going back wave, one backward going wave, and it's their ratio, it's the superposition of that forward and backward going wave that is what we refer to as V of D phasor, okay? That V of D phasor is a summation of purely traveling phasors, but two of them, and it is therefore not a purely traveling phasor anymore by itself. Neither is the current. Current is the difference divided by the characteristic impedance, as we have seen. Any questions? All right? But nevertheless, this generalized reflection coefficient has a nice sort of an interpretation. If we were ever to come here and cut this circuit at any given position, throw the remainder into garbage, and then replace what's left with a lump impedance that happened to be the z of d at that location, nothing in the circuit would change, and we would have a new load reflection coefficient that would correspond to the generalized reflection coefficient that was being calculated for the same position using these equations. Okay, so what's the big deal? We have Mobius transformations. Well, the big deal is that it was known already by mathematicians that when you have complex numbers that are paired by Mobius transformations, if you were to plot one of those complex numbers in one domain on the complex plane, if you had a straight line, that straight line is going to map into a circle in the transform domain, and vice versa. Okay, so basically then, this leads us to consider the pair of two complex planes, one associated with the impedance, z, or its normalized fashion, little z, and the corresponding generalized reflection coefficient, and then consider straight lines corresponding to either little x or little r is constant. So let's introduce some more notation here. So I am going to erase this here and say that in general, z of d is equal to r of d plus jx of d, which are all varying as you move away from the load. And if we were to normalize this guy by z naught, we would get little z, and then dividing r and x in turn with z naught, we would call those little r's and the little x's. These would be normalized resistance and normalized admittance. Okay? And then in my figure here, I am referring to normalized admittance constant or normalized resistance constant. This is the real axis of the complex plane. So a vertical line corresponds to some constant value of real part of the complex number. And on that line, at various heights, you have, of course, the corresponding imaginary parts. There's a whole imaginary part going from minus infinity to plus infinity, but the real part is constant. And a line like this is going to turn into a circle when we go from the complex little z domain to the complex gamma domain. Okay? And then we have lines like this that corresponds to x constant. That is, the imaginary part of the normalized impedance is constant on this line, although the real part is varying all the way from 0 to infinity. Now, we don't go into the minus the real part domain, because that would correspond to active loads. We want to constrain our discussion to only resistances. Sure. You guys know that sometimes in Thevenin modeling, we do deal with negative resistances, but it's always a mathematical model. It's not a real entity. It's just a mathematical model for some element that is capable of delivering energy. Okay? Energy sources are sometimes modeled as negative resistances, but we are not getting into that here. We want to focus only on passive loads. Therefore, the resistance part, or the real part of my impedance, always is going to be non-negative. It can be zero or it can be positive. That's what I'm dealing with. That is why I'm considering only the line that starts from here and goes to infinity. But that line also turns into a circle in the other domain. Okay, so now that brings you to your homework problem. And let's look at your homework problem. Or we could equally look at it here. Okay, so this discussion here is the same as your homework problem. For let's take a peek at your homework problem. This optional problem. See, the equations that you are seeing here are exactly what's in our lecture page. All right. So in this problem, actually, a lot of the algebra we are not asking you to do. Okay, we are asking you to trust us that the algebra is okay, and then use the equations to make plots. That's what we are doing. Okay, so let me go back to the lecture and go from there. Maybe it's typeset more comfortably over there. Okay, so let's start with this equation. Where does that equation come from? Well, it comes from our Mobius transformation. The first equation. So reflection coefficient is what you bang into minus where you write, divided by the sum of the same stuff. So why don't I just basically renormalize this to get the equation over there? I divide the numerator and denominator by z naught, and this equation turns into what we have over there. Little z minus 1 divided by little z plus 1. Okay, and then I say, but my little z is just like I see here. It is little r plus jx. I'm going to make that substitution here, both in the numerator and in the denominator. And then for a moment, I will say, and I have my complex reflection coefficient at any point that is a summation of real plus imaginary parts. I already told you last lecture that it's best to think of the reflection coefficient as a complex number in exponential form, and ultimately that is true. But for this derivation, we are going to, and only in this derivation, we are going to consider the fact that it also can be represented as a real part plus j imaginary part. Okay? So we make these substitutions, and then we manipulate the right-hand side of this equation so that we can put the entire right-hand side into a plus jb form, so that we can associate the real part of one side with the real part of the other side and the imaginary parts. Likewise, so that we get two useful equations. By the time you are done with that exercise, you have identified now the expression for the real part and imaginary part of this complex generalized impedance in terms of the real part and imaginary part of the normalized impedance. Okay? So basically, gamma I and gamma R now functions of R, little r, and little x. Any questions? That's an easy sort of calculation. We could have asked you in the homework, but it is so easy and boring that we don't even bother. Okay? But those of you who would like to see how things work out probably will check on their own that this is the right thing to do. Okay? The next thing is more not so straightforward.
Now that you have these two variables,
it turns out that from those two variables you can rearrange them to have two different equations that describe two different sets of two different families of circles. Okay? But the way you combine them is in the first one you achieve an expression in which there is no little x, only little r. And vice versa, in the second expression, you have no little r, only little x. Okay? So that requires some thinking, some algebra. But checking, verifying that these are true is very easy. All you need to do is now substitute for gamma r here, this equation, for gamma I here, this equation, and work out the right and left hand side. You're going to see that they are consistent. Okay? So verification is easy. Going there is not so easy, but somebody had to do it, and his name was Mr. Smith. I think he was a professor, he was an engineer in Bell Labs in 1930s or so. He came up with this. Okay? Obviously, this kind of thing was already out there in the math world through Mobius, etc. Expectations were there. Now, these two equations, these are the equations that we want you to plot using a compass at home. Okay? Because these are equations of circles. Okay? With respect to what? With respect to variables gamma sub r and gamma sub I. Okay, so now you say, all right, I'm going to construct a gamma plane, a complex gamma plane that will have its horizontal axis corresponding to the real part of gamma and the vertical axis to the imaginary part of gamma, and that indeed looks like the equation of a circle on the gamma plane. So you go and gamma sub r, gamma sub I. You just start treating them like x and y in an ordinary plot, except that let's not say that because x is one of our variables. So just think of like this, okay? So if you look at the first equation, you say that, hey, this is a circle whose center along the horizontal axis is sitting on r over r plus 1. And on the imaginary axis, it's sitting at actually right on, it's sitting on the real axis. It's not sitting on, not, there is no displacement in the imaginary axis. And it has a certain radius. Okay, let's say that little r is equal to 1. If you have a 50 plus J50 type of a transmission line, load sitting on a 50 on transmission line, after we normalize, r would be 1. Okay? So if r is 1, what are we going to have? We're going to have 1 divided by 1 plus 1, that is 1 half. We're going to have an offset of 1 half here, and no offset here, and we have a radius of 1 divided by 2, half radius, half offset along the horizontal axis. So if then I mark this as plus 1, minus 1, and plus 1, minus 1, okay? And just like for no reason whatsoever at all, draw a circle to orient myself, okay? This is not the circle that I'm talking about. The one that corresponds to r equals 1 is a circle whose center is right here at 1 half point and whose radius is 1 half. So it's this circle. Okay? This is equal to, this is the r equals 1 circle. Now, then we can take r equals 2, r equals 3, or r equals 1 half, r equals, etc. We can populate this entire domain with lots of circles. Okay? And when we do that, we start having always circles that are touching here. There is a sort of a singularity point right there at the gamma sub r plus 1, gamma sub I 0 is where all these circles are touching one another, but otherwise they are all corresponding to different values of r. So r is here greater than 1. If r is less than 1, you're going to have a circle like that. And in the homework, we are specifically asking you to consider specific values of r. I don't remember what they are, 4 or 5 of them, to draw all those circles. These are the circles corresponding constant values of r. On these circles, at different locations, we have different values of x's. Okay, they are hidden. We don't know what they are, but we will discover them by actually plotting the other circle. The other circle is parametrized in terms of x, and there is no r, and we will see another set of circles which are orthogonal to the first set and crossing and telling us then where these, how to read the interior of the unit circle
uniquely in terms of the real plus imaginary part normalized impedance. That's what is happening. Okay? So we are taking the inside of the unit circle on the complex gamma plane and learning how to recognize from it, how to read from different locations on that plane the corresponding impedances. That's what we are doing. That's what's Mr. Smith, Engineer Smith device in the 1930s or so. And then we're going to use this as a calculator, basically. Any questions? Okay, so what happens if R is equal to zero? If R is equal to zero, my offset ghost disappears. Then I have to consider a circle that is located, that's centered right at the origin. And what about my radius? My radius becomes one, okay? So then I say that if R is equal to zero, I draw this outside circle. That very circle that I started with for no reason whatsoever at all at the beginning is actually R equals zero circle. So you might as well recognize that as well. Okay, so now what about the second equation? The second equation is parameterized in terms of little x, and we can consider various values of x once again, okay? And this time, the offset along the real axis is fixed. The center that I have to consider for the next circle is always here, but I have to go up or down or something like that. That depends on my x, right? So let's take x equal 1. Then my circle is centered on 1, 1, okay? 1, 1 is here. I have to draw now a circle that's centered around that location. And what about my radius? With x equals 1, my radius is also 1. Okay, so I take a radius 1 circle like this and go whoop like this. So I make this circle. That circle, of course, continues outside, but will not be concerned with all that stuff. Because all the impedances that I care about range with real parts that are non-negative and imaginary parts that can be anything, zero, plus infinity, minus infinity, or anything in between, they all fit within the unit circle inside the complex gamma plane. Any questions? Okay, so let us see why that is the case. When we go and look at these Mobius transformation equations, we can play around mathematically with them. Let's play around with the gamma, okay? Let's take the magnitude of gamma. Gamma is a ratio. If we look at this magnitude, it's going to be the ratio of the magnitudes of the numerator and the denominator, okay? Let us now say that my Z0 is a real quantity because I'm on a lossless transmission line. I know it's a real quantity. And my z is composed of r and x, r plus jx. Furthermore, I only want to consider r's that are non-negative, okay? With all those constraints, you rearrange this, you take this magnitude, and soon enough you recognize that, my God, the denominator can never exceed the denominator, okay? It's always, the top is small, the worst is they are equal. Okay? From this, you reach the conclusion that magnitude of gamma that corresponds to all the impedances that you are considering can never exceed unity. You are constrained to always reside within the unit circle on the complex plane. That is why when I do all my work, I find myself, my impedance, always on the complex gamma plane somewhere within the Smith chart. Now, if I were to visualize my impedance in the complex Z plane instead of complex gamma plane, it can be anywhere. If it's large impedance, I have to have a real big page. Maybe I have to go all the way to infinity, okay? That's not the case with the Smith chart. Smith chart takes whatever the size of your impedance is. After you normalize it, you can put it inside the unit circle. That is the chart that Engineer Smith devised. Any questions? So, when we put all these things together, draw all those circles together, we get a Smith chart that just looks like this, okay? Now, we recognize circles that are all tangent at this point to one another to be constant R circles, okay? Large R's correspond to smallest circles, small values of R correspond to largest values, and all the way, you have an interesting point here, the opposite of that tangent touching point. Now there, if you pay attention, the real part is equal to zero, but the imaginary part is also equal to zero. How do I get that? Well, I didn't finish my whole story, right? We got this circle taking x equal to be one, Had we taken x equals minus 1, we would have drawn this circle because we would have been working with this particular center point. Okay? So positive and negative x's corresponding to inductive and capacitive impedances therefore populate my Smith chart with these types of circles or arcs, let us say. Okay? So now my green arcs correspond to various values of little x, and I have labeled them. X equals, little x equals minus 5, minus 2, minus 1, minus half, minus 0.1. And I run out of 0, minus plus 0 x, okay? But the outer circle, as far as r is concerned, is also 0. So therefore, I say that if I have a complex impedance, that is 0 plus j0, which corresponds physically to what? 0 plus j0 is the impedance of a? Short, yes, exactly. A short will map into this position, okay? Now, what is the opposite of short? Open. When you invert a short impedance, 1 over 0 gives you infinity, and that infinity, if you now back, sort of track your process, is going to be coming here. So, 0 and infinity. This is the open. This is the short, okay? Maybe this is the very first thing to recognize in your usage of Smith chart. Where the short belongs to and where the open belongs to. If you are thinking of the impedance of the short and the open, it turns out that you can also use this chart for admittance representations and admittance calculations, okay? If you are thinking in terms of admittances, then this is an open and this is a short, okay? That's the way it goes. Any questions? Now, this very weird thing that's happening, and I sort of like forewarned you here. When you take the inverse, you find yourself on the other side of the Smith chart. It's not only true for the open and the short, but it's a general property. A Smith chart is also a complex number inverter, okay? So let's quickly look at that. So I'm gonna erase this now. And say that my little z, okay, is, what is it in terms of gamma? 1 plus gamma divided by 1 minus gamma. How do we remember this? We remember this, that impedance comes from the voltage to current ratio. In the voltage there was a summation, in the current there was a difference, and that's why, okay? That's how I remember it. Now, if we invert z and call it y, 1 over z, we have to invert the other side as well. And that will give me 1 minus gamma divided by 1 plus gamma. Okay? But I can rewrite this thing as follows. This is also equal to 1 plus minus gamma divided by 1 minus minus gamma. Okay? Now, gamma is some point in the complex plane, okay? Minus gamma is which point in the complex plane? Boom, the other side, okay? So basically then, we are finding that if our gamma happens to be this red dot on the complex plane, okay? Its inverse is sitting right here. Because this is a gamma, this is a minus gamma. All right. On the real line, you negate real numbers by just flipping to the other side. All right. On the complex plane, for complex number, you negate things by flipping in this sort of like two-dimensional circular ways, or adding or subtracting 180 degrees from the phase, which takes you to the other side. Exactly. All right. So visualize negation in such terms on the complex plane, and then realize that if certain z, little z, is associated with a certain gamma through bilinear transformations, the corresponding admittance, which happens to be the inverse of that guy, is related with the same gamma, but with its sign flipped. And when its sign is flipped, it is sitting on a different location on the complex plane. And that is the Smith chart. Okay? So basically then, you read the value of y that corresponds to little z here, little y, by reading the transmission, the Smith chart at this location. And what do we mean by reading the Smith chart at a given location? You sort of like figure it out, extrapolate, interpolate, whatever you do, to figure out which two sets of circles are passing from each point.
Okay? So if I'm scratching my head and say, what if I had a point here? How do I read that? Well, it's on this blue curve that is labeled as 1. So its real part is 1. Well, its imaginary part is that green curve. I have to follow it all the way to the top. It's also 1. That is 1 plus j 1 point. Okay? Any questions? So this is how one slowly starts understanding what the Smith chart is providing for you. One of them is inversion. You can find always the inverse of a complex number that you pinpoint and locate on the Smith chart by going to the other side of the Smith chart. By flipping through the origin is what we typically say. Flipping through the origin means that change your whatever angle you have by 180 degrees, plus or minus 180 degrees, you're flipped on the other side. Read off that number. That number is the inverse of what you started with. In the complex sense. In the complex sense, you do inversion, of course, 1 over the complex number, which means that you multiply numerator and denominator with the conjugate of the bottom, etc., etc. You know how to do that. Instead of doing that, you flip things. Any questions? Okay. Now, do you guys have the red Smith chart that I distributed? You should have that handy and start reading, and then you will see a lot of charts there, subcharts, etc. Okay, and it can get confusing. At the beginning, you don't have to know most of it, okay? But certain parts you have to know. My Smith chart tool on the web just goes to what is most important, okay? But my other, I gave two handouts, right? I gave two handouts the other day. Maybe some people were not in class last time. Anybody needs copies of this? Okay, two handouts. One of them is my annotated, a dirty Smith chart where I put some notes. And here's a clean one. Okay, thanks. Well. You want some more?
Okay.
You want one? All right, so you should sort of like read what's here, and then I ran out of my Xerox copy, so let me get that back. I'll give it to you.
Sure.
And sort of like discover what's going on here. I have marked certain things. I have top is inductive. If you are interpreting your numbers as an impedance, top is inductive, the bottom is capacitive. That's because of the sign. And then there is this circle there. That circle is the circle of a given reflection coefficient. Which reflection coefficient? If I'm talking about the magnitude, it doesn't matter. They all have the same magnitude. Generalized reflection coefficient has the same magnitude as the load reflection coefficient. And a constant circle then identifies all the possible reflection coefficients on a given line in between two inhomogeneities, that is between the input point and the load point, okay? The angle depends how distant you are, okay? And it is time to now recognize once again what was this generalized reflection coefficient. Nobody's asking any more questions about the inversion, so I'm assuming that you're comfortable. Are you, Elmo? If you have a complex number, and if you can read a complex number and identify it on the Smith chart the way I described, you can always flip to the other side and read again. And when you read again, that is the inverse of the first one, okay? And if the first one was an impedance, the second thing that you are reading is the corresponding admittance. If the first thing was the admittance, then what you are reading after you flip is the corresponding impedance. You just use it in this fashion. That is why on the top, it says impedance and admittance coordinates. That's what it says, right? Which means that, hey, you guys, if you know what you are doing, you can use this chart for impedance calculations or admittance calculations in the sense that I'm describing here. Okay, what was I going to do next? I interrupted myself. Oh, here. Okay, so this gamma. And now you are seeing that this entire Smith chart is nothing but the interior circle of the unit circle in the gamma plane. Sort of like gridded with these circles which help us read the impedances. Okay? Now, this guy itself is this guy times e to the minus j 2 beta d. Okay? Now, this guy is its own magnitude, which is the radius that you see. That radius cannot exceed 1 if you are on a passive transmission line. okay? A transmission line with passive loads, okay? Therefore, you have to be inside. But this guy also has an angle, okay? Let's say it is, I don't know, 45 degrees. It could be a, you know, a 45 degree complex number. Then what is the overall impedance? The overall impedance then is magnitude gamma L at an angle of 45 degrees minus 2 beta. Okay? If beta is, if D is equal to 0, the implication you are at the load point, and then that corresponding complex number is going to be sitting at some location on the Smith chart representing the load point. As you are banging away from the load point, the angle that you're working with is no longer 45 degrees. Because of the minus sign, it is less or more than 45 degrees. Less than 45 degrees. So you start on the complex plane with a certain location at the load where your gamma might have a 45 degree angle measured like this. But as you are now traveling towards the generator, your angle is getting smaller and smaller because of this minus sign. And then you are traveling in a clockwise direction. That clockwise direction in which the angles are being reduced, the angle of complex gamma is being reduced, is taking you from the load point towards the generator point. You see the ever new values of the complex gamma. So this is why when you look at the chart here, it says towards generator, wavelength towards generator arrow in one side, and that is the clockwise arrow on the side, and the opposite one is towards the load, okay? So you may have actually your generalized reflection coefficient sitting at this point, but you are not at the load point, you are away from the load point, and ask yourself, what happens if I go towards the load? Then you will go in this direction. As you're traveling on the Smith, chart means going around circles. Which circles? Constant gamma circles. Constant gamma circles are your paths on the Smith chart, okay? You travel on that chart towards the generator by going clockwise towards the load by going anti-clockwise. That's the way you orient yourself for these types of calculations. Anyway, so now, three summers or so ago, I decided to write a JavaScript that gives us a tool that we can use and use over and over again. Am I running out of time? How much time do I have? Just a minute or two, right? So let's go to this. Okay, so this is something that I wrote. Okay, let's reset this. Okay, this is a clean Smith chart. Okay, suppose that I have a given circuit and I know my load impedance. I am interested in finding the impedance towards the generator some distance away. Suppose that we are at 50 plus J50. Okay, that's my load. We are sitting on a 50 ohm load. So I normalize my impedance, I plus 1 plus J1. I decide that I should go and place a mark here on 1 plus J1. Where is that point? It's right this point. Do you guys see that? That's 1 plus J1. Jim, do you see that? Jason, do you see that? Okay, so you put that point. As soon as you put that point, if you are doing it with paper, pencil, compass at home, you always invariably find yourself that the next thing you do is you take your compass and you draw a circle that goes through that point. Why? Because as you are moving away from the load towards the generator, that's the circle that you'll be traveling on. So when I wrote my JavaScript, okay, I designed it in the following fashion. The most normal usage is to place a point and draw a circle through it, and then rotate on that circle clockwise or anti-clockwise, depending, and stop somewhere, okay? You are going to go through some degrees around. Okay, now, what do you think, how much do you go around the Smith chart if you go by lambda over 2? Full circle. Why? Because we learned 2 lectures ago that on a transmission line, the impedance repeats itself every lambda over 2. If my impedance is going to repeat and come to the same point, it has to be a full circle. Second, if you go quarter wave, how much is that going to be? Now scale it. If half a wavelength is full circle, a quarter wave is half circle. Okay? And 1/8 of a circle is 90 degrees. Okay? So you start now thinking in terms of how many circles I am going to go. Okay? Clearly, anything that's beyond a full circle has a redundancy. So you typically work with lesser types of displacement. So I then designed this as follows. I'm going to tap
I'm going to tap my finger on 1-1, and you'll see immediately a circle drawn there. I didn't hit it well. Okay, there you go. All right, so this is giving me, okay, my impedance there. And it is then, the next thing I'm going to do is tap it again at another angle, and that is going to give me a relative change.
So I have gone in anti-clockwise direction from my original location. So I did not go from the load towards the generator. Rather, I went from some point towards the load. Okay, had I clicked on the other side, I would have been traveling. But in any case, the angular displacement that I have is indicative of certain distance that I covered on the transmission line. Okay, it's a short piece. Okay, it's even smaller than 90 degrees, so it's less than lambda over 4. Okay, and I started with a certain impedance. I have a new impedance that I can read. Okay, so you do this either with paper, pencil, compass on your Smith chart, or you can use it over there. Okay, with the mouse clicks and all that. Try to exercise this before tomorrow's lecture, and we will do now real problems using the Smith chart in tomorrow's lecture. Okay, thank you very much.